Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Brainstorm. We're down a man today. No Sam. It is just myself and Brett Winton, and we are talking Apple and WWDC. Maybe we finally have a smart Siri. Who knows? Brett, you and I have to be careful. We've been battling on this name for the last few years. We don't have our mediator, Sam, today. But I think there's a lot to dive into.
It's a good thing we're not in the same room. We probably come to blows.
Exactly. Yeah, this has always been a hot button for both you and I, taking really the opposite side of where we think Apple will be long-term when it comes to AI. Today, I think we finally got some incremental news around what they plan to do with AI. And to me, it fits. It fits into what they should have been doing for the last few years. It's the first time we're starting to see them address AI in the way that I think everyone in the world outside of internal at Apple thinks they should have been addressing it. So we'll dive right in. Name change for Siri. Siri is now being called Siri AI. It is getting a whole new backend architecture. If people remember,
is that a name Apple, change? It's the same name with AI on the end of it.
Yeah, with AI on the end. But that's a significant by Apple standards. That's pretty significant.
Just making sure. Okay, keep going. Yeah.
In terms of what we're getting, there was news, and we've talked about it on this show, that Apple would be distilling Google Gemini models. And so they did talk about that today. This is taking Apple Foundation models with Gemini models and pairing the two. So distilling what was useful from the Gemini suite of models and bringing it to the Apple architecture and silicon. Now you can have both on-device compute, and they also have their own private servers. So there's a bit of toggle between what will happen on-device and which devices will be able to do this, and then also what's going to be routed externally to the cloud. But it's very clear that Siri looks like it's going to be getting a major upgrade, as in, now you can have deeper conversations. It is deeply integrated into all of your personal contacts, so you can query into your own messages, images, photos, you name it. Siri now has the ability to access that, which I think has been a big point, at least from my standpoint.
Isn't this what they announced? Was it 2 years ago?
No,
and it's the same.
I would say what they announced 2 years ago versus today is much more in line with where the rest of the market is, versus what I think they announced 2 years ago was like playground mode, where it was like, here we have image gen and it can only do cartoon characters or
those are the things they launched 2 years ago. But 2 years ago, I remember there being Apple Intelligence, and Apple, the stock was up, high single digits percent. People are like, they finally get it, and this is the features they're going to ship. And then they didn't effectively ship most of those features. It turns out it was too hard for them. So haven't they gone back, and maybe now they have a better chance of actually launching these features, but they're basically announcing the same stuff again?
I would say that this is building off of what they had previously announced and some of the features they ended up rolling out. So there are certain features within iOS that have Apple Intelligence baked in. Now it's taking that and really kind of, I would say, like unleashing the capability to the fullest extent of their new Apple Foundation models, which have been distilled by Gemini. So you're able to query into your chats, which I think is a big deal. You're able to push out directly to your calendar. So everything is like deeply integrated now with both their first party and also some third-party apps, depending on if the developer wants to use some of these capabilities. In terms of what has already been announced, I would say it's like very limited in scope compared to what they plan to announce. My biggest concern, and I think it gets back to your point, Brett, which is they made this announcement 2 years ago, and then we had to wait a few months to get access to it, and then it was pretty underwhelming. Well, I was watching this today and I was getting super excited. I'm like, oh my God, I'm finally going to be right. And Brett's going to have to sit there and be like, oh no, Nick, you were right. And then right at the end, like any good drug commercial, it was like this massive disclaimer of this won't be launching until the fall because of, beta, and it won't be available in these languages and X, Y, and Z. So it was like all of these like delays again in terms of when this will actually be available to the public, which
I think there's a challenge that Apple faces in that, and it's a challenge not just for Apple but across all of AI, where delivering a prototype that can do 80% of what you anticipate it doing is quite easy with AI. And then, but then cleaning it up so it does the last, you know, call it even like 15%, leaving 5% as error, is quite hard. And so I think it's a challenge for management teams. And they say, oh, this demo is almost working. Therefore, we can say, yes, this is going to happen, and we'll just clean it up and we'll get it all the way there. And that cleanup, get it all the way there, is actually, you know, 300% more work than everything that's already been done. And that's almost like a function of the way AI systems work that can lead prognosticators astray, not just in Apple land. I mean, think about how long on the robo-taxi side we've said, hey, this is like right there. We're almost there. And I think that as you get into the real like implementation space, the world is massively micro complicated in a way that makes it challenging. And I think that the Apple as a company that prides itself on delivering the entirely completed packaged product to people is particularly vulnerable to that, where it means that they'll hold back from shipping because it's like, well, this has all these things that we know don't work. And so then therefore we can't ship it. And so it makes it challenging for them to like try to operate at the frontier.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, you know, the release 2 years ago gives me some hesitation that what they announced today, once they officially roll it out in the fall, won't actually be what they demoed today. So to your point, like, I think we are definitely in a wait and see mode, but I do.
But I also think not just Apple, but everybody also is looking at what Anthropic has delivered and looking at Codex and saying, oh, that's what we need. We need something at least approaching that. But I also think over the course of a year, the playing field is going to shift again because of the rate improvement of these models. So even Apple, I saw them demo this, you know, the person saying, hey, can you look up like tickets for this? And it's like, well, the tickets won't drop until this date. And it's like, set a reminder for me on that date when the tickets will drop. And it's like, but that's not actually what people will come to expect. It won't be, oh, now I'm going to get pinged as a reminder on my device. So I have to go back to my device and be like, okay, now find me the site and do other stuff. Yeah. Instead, you want to say, when that drops, buy me the tickets.
Yeah. That's exactly what I thought. I was like, you know, oh my God, they're going to do it. They're going to do it. And then it was like, set a reminder. And I was like, come on.
Yeah.
We're way past this in terms of capability. But this is, this is very much in Apple fashion where they're not reinventing or they're not inventing anything new. They're kind of reinventing and making it fit to the Apple ecosystem. I will say the one other major change that I think should give us some hope as to, okay, they are making the step in the right direction in terms of capability. Siri now will have its own app. So when you are making these queries and you're having these conversations, there's at least a place to go back to, which is very, you know, akin to what we're used to with the chatbot apps now. So that to me seems like they're starting to make the right steps in the right direction finally. Whereas I think 2 years ago it was, okay, they're making the right steps, but who knows what direction they're going to ultimately take.
I'm telling you, maybe you misremember 2 years. 2 years ago when they did this, everybody's like, Apple's arrived. Apple intelligence is it. They're going to sell all their iPhones. I think that
I'm falling into the same trap.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, I think they are being a little bit more measured in what they're promising here, I think. I do think they're more likely to deliver on some of the things that they've promised. Like even search across their entire ecosystem, leave aside AI, search is like doesn't work very well in weird ways. Like even if you do Spotlight search in your on your desktop, it like some things show up and others don't. Like it almost feels like they're re-architecting all of it. I think they need to. And
that was a big point of emphasis today. They did talk about, you know, I think they've come to terms with the search experience across the Apple suite of products isn't the best. So they did spend time, and that was actually announced as like a separate product unveil, that search is getting essentially like a new backend. So it should start to, and if it doesn't work, right, this is where all of the pieces fitting together matter, because from at least from what I understand, Apple Intelligence will be using that search.
Yes, it'll be like tool use of that search to like find the stuff you need to find.
So if that doesn't work, then Apple Intelligence won't be that intelligent.
Right. Yeah. And I do think that there's a, you know, they present it as this is a unified kind of like AI surface, but the on-device models are clearly Apple developed. And I think that's separate from the Gemini models. And I worry about on-device versus their private cloud versus stuff they're going out to GCP for Google Cloud Services or whatever that stands for, even, you know, so like that there's actually going to be weird kind of like seams in what they deliver. And that's the, you know, if you look at like what Microsoft did with OpenAI, they've basically said, we have to do it all ourselves. We can't, you know, rely on another in order to deliver the experience that really, really works for us within the context of our apps. And we'll see if they succeed, but that's clearly like, they decided it's, you know, we need to spend this capital ourselves on our own capability. Apple has not decided to do that, at least in a very big way. They've said, oh, we can outsource this portion and kind of like insource this portion. And I think that's a challenge. And I think that there's a, you know, do you think that they are going to launch like an AI specific form factor? And even how would you define that? And over the next year, like, how do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't know if it will be AI specific. Like, I take the personal stance that, you know, we have the hardware ecosystem today that would be, you can kind of purpose build it with AI in mind, but you don't need to reinvent anything. Like, I'm not a fan of pendants. I'm not a fan of, you know, wearing some, you know, extra piece of jewelry or what have you. I think, you know, with the watch, with AirPods, with glasses, with a phone, you can capture all of the context you'd need. And that's really the only purpose to have external hardware. It's one, to have a better input device for voice, and then to be able to capture, you know, context from what you're visually seeing and what you're also hearing. So in terms of, do they need something AI specific? I'm sure they'll end up launching something. But to me, I think you're wearing the pair of, you know, hardware that is probably best for what they will do. And maybe they throw a camera on it, which I think has been rumored, so that they can capture some visual data. But outside of that, I think the more important question is where this is headed and where the starting points for each one of these companies are. And if you think about Anthropic and OpenAI, they're starting from, we're building the new operating system, right? And Apple's over here saying, well, we have the existing hardware footprint. And they're both kind of headed towards each other, in my opinion, where like eventually, in my opinion, Anthropic and OpenAI will either license or try to build out their own hardware to be able to capture more of that personal context. Whereas on Apple's side, they're moving towards, okay, we need to build out this new operating system so that we don't have these new software companies come and completely disrupt the app ecosystem. So
yeah, but I mean, that's clearly not Apple doing like a Siri app is not building a new operating system.
But it's dynamically embedded into the new island. So it like sits atop. If you were to really think about what they announced today, it does sit atop. Like, it has its own app just so you can go back and reference past conversations. But it does sit atop other chatbots from just the mere fact that you can say, hey, Siri, instead of hey, ChatGPT or hey, Claude.
Yeah. Right? As of now, so when Siri accidentally triggers for me, I'm like, you know, I can't figure out how to get it off my screen. Yeah. I'm like, come on, please.
Yeah.
So that maybe they can net improve from that. But what I was thinking is like, I don't know if you've seen, but people are now selling little 3D printed doodads to keep your laptop open as you're carrying it around, so your codecs or your Claude code can keep running. Now, that's a sign that we need a new form factor. And it's not a new form factor that's a personal form factor, but it's like a, you know, even how computers work now needs to change. Apple has a great AI hardware form factor, which is the Mac Mini and the Mac Studio. And those are sold out till, you know, whenever. And I think that, like, if I were playing corporate strategists for Apple a few years ago, I would have argued, well, look, you need to make it very easy for people developing within your app ecosystem to use AI to develop and to kind of like trigger kind of like AI models into your apps. Now I think they need to say, hey, these Mac Minis are going to serve as the substrate for a lot of kind of like people running their own personal agents. Let's figure out a way that we can securely use the phone to command those agents from distance and like actually tie that together in a way that's safe and private. And maybe you need to like basically lean into their actually really differentiated hardware capability there, where suddenly we're going to go to, you know, potentially people having little servers running in their homes all the time to run their own agents. And like their kind of like personal interface to those agents could be a really, really big, if they did it, like, I think they could do that well, and it would be a way that kind of like the entire operating system changes, where you're no longer, you know, you're really just like orchestrating the agents that run on your device. And then from there, they begin to try to develop out kind of their own agent sets that run on it and stuff. But
yeah, it's like all of those companies that were building out water heaters that would mine Bitcoin. Instead of mining Bitcoin, you're just running agents, and a company is paying you for that.
Yes.
Or it's serving your own purposes.
Right, right. And I do think that that agent space, there is like their privacy angle and you running your own agents. That is, there is like a useful mix there. Even if you...
And they have their own custom silicon, and you know, I think they do have, as you point out, like an edge on the compute side that I don't know is fully appreciated yet. And like maybe when we get to that agentic, like that next phase of growth where agents are doing the primary, you know, amount of compute, even on a personal level, maybe that gets more recognized by the market and other participants.
Yeah. Well, speaking of hardware infrastructure, there was additional SpaceX terrestrial data center news over the weekend. So it, previously it had been reported that that Anthropic was renting data center from SpaceX for around, it's a little more, depending on how you do the math, more than $30 billion per gigawatt. This is quite good for SpaceX because per gigawatt they're spending, you know, less than $30 billion to build the data centers. So, you know, 1 year payback period. Well, Google is also renting GPUs from SpaceX, and they're renting GPUs for more than $50 billion per gigawatt. And so the actually, you know, ironically, kind of like people, including us, had always thought, well, actually the first, call it even 5 years of SpaceX, once it's a public company, it's going to be all about kind of Starlink and the profitability of Starlink and the great return on capital characteristics of Starlink. But here they have this on the ground terrestrial data center business that, because they're monetizing, it's going to look really profitable, as in they will have spent, you know, call it $29 billion per gigawatt to build a thing over a 5 year life. That's like, call it, you know, $5-6 billion in costs per year, and there's another billion to run it. So they're going to get 50 plus billion against $6 billion per year in costs. The marginal profitability of kind of that Google contract is going to look like it's, you know, high 80s gross margin. And so that is, it's actually a little bit, I'm a little puzzled how to think about how they're going to treat that business relative to kind of their Grok XAI business.
I have a question off of this. Given Elon responded to some of the work you did showing and highlighting the profitability of this business and basically followed up on your tweet and said, hey, calm down, you know, this is only short term. And then a week later, he goes and signs another major contract. Like, exactly how are you thinking about the long term? And specifically on the Grok piece, assuming, you know, this business doesn't happen if Grok is as successful as OpenAI and Claude and Gemini, where, you know, they're compute constrained, not the other way around. So assuming Grok starts to come online because of the Cursor acquisition, what happens to this NeoCloud business?
Well, it depends on what you mean by Grok coming online. So I think the
more demand than they can service.
Yeah, yes, yes. But then it would be monetized inference. So you should think of like their gigawatts as being allocated to four different categories. One, infrastructure as a service, which right now they've basically sold 0.8 gigawatts for infrastructure as a service, or rented it out, versus end of Q1 26, they had a full gigawatt built. So they've rented out, you know, 80% of their compute. Okay, to monetized inference where they're charging somebody a subscription and they are giving them access. And we think that monetized inference can currently, you know, you can get around $30 billion per gigawatt for that. It's a very good business. Three, unmonetized inference, which is, you know, OpenAI has a slug of this and XAI clearly has a slug of this, where in XAI's case, I, as a premium X user or random X user, can ask Grok questions. I can use Grok Imagine to generate stuff. They're spending gigawatts on that, but I'm not paying directly for it in any profound way. And so they're counting on either advertising or converting me into subscriptions down the road. And then three, like gigawatts for training. And that is investing in the future capability of the model that you hope is going to be monetized gigawatts. So the from the call it short-term focus shareholder perspective or immediate cash flow focused shareholder perspective, the concern would be Elon has signed all of these great contracts and he takes away generating revenue to spend it on training, which is on a bet on future capability of Grok that's not there yet. I think it would be fine if it's like, hey, there's lots of demand for Cursor. Cursor needs more capacity because, you know, Cursor should be pricing at, you know, on the order of like 75% gross margin. So you'd happily take infrastructure as a service business that, you know, is going to evaporate anyway because those partners will find other providers and convert it into business that generates you revenue and kind of increases your competitive position. The issue is once Cursor is roped in, like they'll have probably an opportunity to throw a lot of money at training against the Cursor data on the bet that that improves the model, improves their capability, but you won't see the immediate term cash flow. And so I think that's the, like, roughly as I'm thinking about it, I think both these Anthropic and Google deals are short-term. Short-term, yeah. Not, as he says, it's like he has a right to cancel, they have a right to cancel. They need immediate compute because for in Anthropic's case, they want to have like the revenue growth as high as possible as they get into an IPO. And they're able to actually charge, you know, ultra premium amounts per gigawatt because, you know, people are spending kind of like paying no attention to the costs right now. And so, you know, for Anthropic, this is revenue generating for them to pay this cost. But clearly, like, they are trying to capacity plan down the line, and it does not include continuing to rent at this price. So, you know, I have it bleeding, like 50% of it falling off annually until it bleeds down, and then assume that SpaceX can only charge more market rate per gigawatt for their compute. Even that for SpaceX looks really good because they can build the infrastructure more efficiently than others. So there's also this, you know, I mean, I think that there's a, the they spent less than $30 billion per gigawatt building these data centers. The market trying to build these data centers spends 45 to 55 billion per gigawatt. So actually you could, they could just be an infrastructure as a service company and be like way more profitable than the other neo clouds and scale and create a big business that way. But I don't think they're going to strategically.
You think he'll come in with Cursor / Grok eventually?
Yes. And you could, in some ways, you can interpret their actions right now. If this, you know, if they do this business for less than a year, then they've gotten the data center for free. So right. Maybe they're operating on this at the margin. We're renting out capacity just to pay for the CapEx, you know, and so it's self-funding in that way. And then, you know, once we've rented out each bit of capacity, then we're reserving for, or we're taking the frontier for our own training and then reserving the long tail of stuff that we've built out, or to renting the long tail of stuff that we've built out to pay for that frontier training. So it could be a way that the line, rather than costing them cash over time, it's basically cash neutral. And that would be, you know, ultimately it's trying to get to a spot where they're competitive with Anthropic and OpenAI, monetizing at that healthy rate. And then their data centers in space, or really server racks in space, begins to scale. And then they have great monetization characteristics on that. But we'll see.
Yeah. Has there ever been another company in history where the underlying business has changed so much leading up to its IPO? Because it seems like even a month ago when we were talking about this, it was a materially different story. And like, even if, and then if you were to rewind the clock a year, it's like some of the stuff we're talking about now, if you had pitched investors a year ago, they would say, okay, yeah, good luck. Or yeah, and that's not happening anytime soon. And now it just seems like a fundamentally different business than it was even a year ago. And especially, you know, and a month ago as well.
Yeah. Well, yes, a year, if you rewind the clock, or if you look at our publications, it was a little more than a year ago. We didn't anticipate AI compute at all for SpaceX, and they hadn't bought xAI yet. And kind of they, I don't think they recognize that as an opportunity. You can underwrite the entire business based on expectations for Starlink. So while kind of like the reason they're coming public is because there's so much opportunity to deploy capital because AI compute is such a big opportunity. If you didn't have that, they probably wouldn't have come public, because then Starlink can self-fund and they would have built out that constellation and then gone from there to kind of the Mars. But the scope and scale of the opportunity is so much bigger with AI compute and really the need to deploy capital. That's why they're raising. We always anticipated that infrastructure as a service would and could be a part of the business. Like the way from the start we modeled AI compute is they were going to rent out a third of their space compute resource. With access to the underlying financials, now we can tell, one, Starlink monetizes at a higher rate than we had previously modeled. And then two, we knew they were good at data centers, but they are very, very good, or very capital efficient at building data centers. And so the profitability of the on-the-ground business, if they do it as infrastructure as a service, is much higher than we would have anticipated. So it's kind of like, it's more like the business is complex and many of the underlying metrics had been under, you know, restrictions on our ability to share them, and NDA. And so then upon kind of coming public, then it allows us to, you know, pull apart the business and be like, oh, this is a really interesting characteristic. This is really interesting. And the xAI acquisition, I don't know if a company has acquired another entity that large within like 6 months of its IPO. So
and then the very, very short answer to Cursor.
Yes. And then well, Cursor's like a little small add-on to XAI. Yeah,
only $60 billion. Only $60 billion. Talking about.
Well, I mean, but I think it's a great asset. I mean, I think that there is it seems more clear, maybe, that this is consolidating down to like, you know, 3-4 players going after kind of the frontier model space and, you know, recognizing that as a, call it, collective $15 to $20 trillion enterprise value opportunity. You know, SpaceX has its own advantages that allow them to go after that, that others do not. And they have weaknesses relative to the others. So they are having to kind of like scramble. And if you, like Elon at some point said, you know, I have like, basically I have a strategy that'll get us access to the maximum amount of compute over time, which is true. And then I just need to not mess up the mid game, which is, I think, the space we're in now. And there's a lot of execution to get to kind of like that, call it mid 2030s, where suddenly space compute is really scaling in a crazy way, that he has to conduct.
It seems like, to your point on the frontier model side, there's 5 major players. There's SpaceX AI, there's OpenAI, there's Anthropic, there's Alphabet, and then the last one is Meta, the AI 5, right? In terms of, you know, continually leapfrogging, and you could say that some of them have even
fun. Well, I mean, if you're going to layer in Meta, then you'd probably have to layer in Microsoft, and then you have to put in DeepSeek. I think you should think of the collection going, you should think of it, there's like this enterprise AI opportunity that there's a collection going after, then there's the consumer AI opportunity, which is you know, maybe it's more winner take all. And this is where like Apple's like, yes, we have our angle on this. And like, clearly Alphabet's going after that. Clearly Meta's going after that, you know, and then OpenAI has its exposure. And I would say XAI has like less of an angle there, frankly, but we'll see. And like, I, over time, it does seem like the overlap between those players, there's probably going to be, you know, one or two that manages to win at both. But the 15-ish trillion enterprise value opportunity, that's just looking at the enterprise side. So, you know, I on your work, it's something like $900 billion accruing to the consumer side. So you could say maybe that's worth another $9 trillion, you know, and as a separate thing to go after.
All right, we are up against time. One last point. Elon took Twitter private 1,320 days ago at $44 billion. In 5 days' time, expected from the time of this recording, Twitter will officially, again, X, will officially be a public company again at the price of $1.75 trillion as an expected you know, IPO price. So didn't think that would happen, but here we are.
Well, it is, you know, I think that there is a, someone made or was making a claim that going from a trillion to 10 trillion in value is easier than going from $100 billion to $1 trillion in value, which is itself easier than going from 10 to 100. And I was thinking, like, the reason that would be is imagine the power law curve is steepening, where it's like if you're in the top three or four positions, it just like shoots to infinity, right? If you're where you don't want to be is the middle, like this middle ground where you just get like collapsed into the long tail and there's like, you know, 500 companies worth whatever, like a few billion dollars, and then a few companies worth $100 trillion. And so that's one, an argument for kind of X layering in with XAI, layering in with SpaceX. It's kind of like the entire convergence thesis is like, hey, there's going to be some companies that are, yeah, $10 trillion, $100 trillion, but it's only going to be a few. And so you have to be on the left side of that inflection and of the power law curve to keep extending up rather than getting bled down into the tail.
Yeah, if you look at the cohort of companies that are $1 trillion plus, and then you look at just their revenue growth, like they have best in class revenue growth on revenue bases that are the size of most companies' market cap, you know? So it's like, to your point, like they have hit some sort of escape velocity in whatever sector that they operate in, where they seem to be just consolidating power. And as a result of that, revenue, profits, and eventually market cap shoots up.
Yeah. Though I do wonder if then there's like even a winnowing of that group where it's like somebody falls off at the margin and suddenly they get squished down. Possibly. Like Apple. Yeah. Like Apple.
Yeah. No. I was daydreaming. All right. On that note, we are going to call it. Thank you, everyone, for joining. We'll be back next week after the IPO.
ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public are separate, unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to any company marketing or selling the products or services of the others. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public make no representation or warranties regarding and expressly disclaim any responsibility or liability for any acts, omissions, losses, or damages of the other entities or their affiliates, officers, employees, or agents. No company shall be liable for any indirect, incidental, consequential, or special damages arising out of or in connection with this podcast or its contents. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARC to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARC's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statement. ARC assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARC and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARC believes to be reliable. However, ARC does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.